And I think, you know, his lyrics don't date. That's why Candle in the Wind was a hit the second time around, because it's still a great lyric. And, you know, that's the biggest tribute I can say as a singer. I never get fed up with singing his lyrics.
This is Bernie Taupin.
And I'm Elton John, in the studio for Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Most of rock's most famous double albums didn't need to be. Anybody remember Johnny Winter's three-sided vinyl album in 1969 called Second Winter? The esteemed Beatles producer Sir George Martin even lamented that the iconic Beatles White Album would have made a much better single disc. Truth is, less than 10% of the top 50 albums on Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 albums of all time are double albums, and that's no coincidence. But there are exceptions. Spectacular ones, in fact. Convergences of time, place, and superhuman songwriting inspiration, such as the period 1972 through 1975, when Elton John had 7 consecutive number one albums in the charts. That's a feat that no one, not even the Beatles, had ever accomplished. It was in the midst of this record-setting run that Elton John, born Reginald Kenneth Dwight, 1947, a child of the London suburbs, and his rural English lyricist Bernie Taupin, they created the double album brimming with 18 songs called Goodbye Yellow Brick Road that many consider their masterpiece. Elton John fondly recalls that intensely prolific period with me in the studio.
We were contracted to do 2 albums a year, and we found it no difficulty to write and record 2 albums a year, tour, and make separate singles, which means when you're feeling vital and feeling good, like I am now, the reason why we did it was for pure enjoyment. We were suddenly young fans that were in the position that were being successful, and we couldn't believe it, and we were enjoying ourselves so much. And I think that enjoyment showed itself on those particular, on all the early albums, you know? Particularly from Tumbleweed through to Yellow Brick Road, I think we were just having a ball. I mean, we didn't even think of stopping. We were just, you know, our creative juices were so, we were so lucky to be able to break when we did, and being in the right place at the right time.
Full of monkeys and my old lady.
The terrific song Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting actually predated the Goodbye Yodel Brick Road album by a full 5 months in June 1973. Elton John's lyricist Bernie Taupin remembers writing those words.
I mean, it's a really working class English, working class pub song, you know, as far as from the lyrical standpoint. I've always been so influenced by American music and Americana, and because I live here, and even before I came here, everything I wrote from Tumbleweed and even to an extent things on the Elton John album and Empty Sky. And I've always written things within an American slant, basically.
And this is just about your typical Saturday night out at a pub when everyone just goes down there and gets
slopped. Best friend floats in the bottom of a glass, you know? Juvenile product of the working class. So, actually, sometimes I think about it, it's in this society we're so conscious about, you know, promoting violence and everything. I suppose it's not exactly the most subtle statement, but I think people tend to relate to it much more to just basically having a good time than, you know, I think we have to substitute dancing for fighting.
Yeah. And things like Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, which we tried and tried to get the feeling on, and we couldn't. It was the first song I did the vocal live standing up without me playing on it. I put the piano on afterwards.
Elton John and Bernie Taupin started writing songs together in 1967. It was, and is, an odd kind of collaboration. Bernie would write lyrics on his own, sometimes coming up with songs in an hour or less, and give the finished lyrics to Elton, who then would put the words to music. Bernie Taupin never knew what the songs would sound like until after Elton was done. There's no arguing with the results, though. Goodbye Yellow Brick Road was their eighth album together, and like most of the others, it was recorded outside of England. Here's Elton John.
We always used to record outside of Britain. We liked to go take the band and work in an environment where the musicians were there when we were writing the songs, like the Honky Chateau album. And then we thought, well, we've done two albums at the Chateau. Let's go to Jamaica, because the Rolling Stones had just done Goat's Head Soup there.
Steak.
And we went to Jamaica to do the Yellow Brick Road album. In fact, to more or less write it and then do it. And it was the day after the Foreman-Frazier fight in Kingston we landed, and the island was crawling. It was I've never been so frightened of a place in my life as Kingston. It was a very dangerous place. The band went to Otto Rios and to leave me to write the songs, and we stayed in a hotel called the Pink Flamingo where Les McCann was playing. That was one of the nicest things about it. We'd go down and watch Les McCann at night, who was great. And basically the studio didn't really work out at all, and we wrote most of the songs while we were there.
It wasn't the right environment. Yeah. There was, I mean, I hate to use such a crass term, but the vibes were not good.
The vibes were not good.
You know, I mean, it just wasn't conducive at all.
And the studio was just, Gus didn't get on with the studio.
The Stones had just been down there and had a horrendous time. Yeah, too,
and also, and Cat Stevens actually, who did the was it the Foreigner album? Yeah, Foreigner.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, with The Hurt on it, that track, The Hurt. And, you know, he was coming in after us, and there weren't enough microphones for us, let alone him. So it just didn't work, and we just cut our losses and said, right.
Thank you.
Bernie Taupin and Elton John continue the story of their ordeal of attempting to record this album in Jamaica.
There were a lot of other little incidents that went on that, I mean, we decided to leave and they impounded all the cars and, the hotel, there was some business things that just weren't gelling for some reason, I don't know, and there were some misunderstandings in the hotel. And I don't know, they just wanted to give us a bad time, basically, I think, because we wanted to leave. And we had trouble sort of getting out. It was like fleeing a sort of banana republic.
I was staying in the bedroom that Bill Wyman's wife was raped at knife point during the goat's head. It just wasn't happening.
It was just bad vibes.
I mean, I got attacked. Everyone was at dinner down in the hotel. And I got this huge centipede crawled across me in bed. The screams could be heard in Barbados.
We really wanted to work there
because
we wanted that, you know, that Caribbean vibe, that sweaty kind of feel that we could have got out of there, but just didn't gel. And I mean, we were so, and we flew to New York
and we cheered.
We were like cheering. It's like, oh God,
it wasn't anybody's fault at all. Bad, you know, just things happen in mini doses. But because I was afraid to go out of the hotel, I mean, most of those songs were written in a 2 or 3 day period.
Well, let's put it like this: you can't really record comfortably in a studio surrounded by guards with machine
and pickets.
Guns.
And also, the people were on strike. It was Byron Lee's studio.
Yeah,
a guy called Byron Lee, and
Dynamics,
it was also a pressing plant. A pressing plant, and his employees were on strike. Picketing the studio. So as we would drive in the Volkswagen bus through the gates, they would be spitting sort of stuff at us through blowpipes. I mean, it was very, very archaic. Some of the equipment had got smashed. It was just not, you know, it was, the only great thing about it was the music coming from the record shacks on the way to the studio was brilliant.
I mean, all that was so good because it should have happened like that. It should have felt right, but it just didn't, you know. And luckily we were able to get into
the chateau
and we went straight there and just bang.
The songs were written over more or less a 3 day period of time.
It's the fastest time we ever took to. All those songs were practically written in about 3 or 4 days, one of them.
And we have extra songs actually. We have about 21 songs. I wrote them all mostly on electric piano and on a Fender Rhodes in my hotel room.
And I wrote everything just in my bedroom.
The Honky Chateau album, for example. I mean, before that, I would be with the band playing around, and Bernie would be upstairs, and the lyrics would come down, and as soon as I get them, I'd be playing, and the band would join in, and that really worked really well. And now that album was, because the vibes were so bad, I stayed in my room and wrote all the songs, and we cut our losses. We went to France and just put it down. The chateau was a very lucky place for us. I mean, it was not the most technically brilliant place in the world, but it had a great atmosphere. For writing it was a lucky studio for us.
Hello, baby, hello. Haven't seen your face for a while. Have you quit doing time for me? Or are you still the same spoiled child? Hello, I said hello. Is this the only place you thought to go? Am I the only man ever had, or am I just the last surviving friend that is? Your heart and let your feelings flow. You're not lucky knowing me, keeping the speed real slow. In any case, I set my own pace by stealing the show. Say hello. Harmony, gee, I really love you and I wanna love you.
harmony from Goodbye Yellow Brick Road and Elton John. I swear, Billy Joel has been trying to rewrite that song ever since 1973. Can you believe it's never been a single until now? When we come back in the studio, you'll hear about the writing and recording of Benny and the Jets. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter, at Redbeard Rocks, and discover all your favorite rockers at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard in the studio for part one of this classic album's anniversary as Elton John and Bernie Taupin bid farewell Yellow Brick Road.
Welcome back. I'm Elton John in the studio for Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
I'm Bernie Taupin in the studio for Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
And I'm Redbeard. Elton, Bernie, and the band eventually recorded Goodbye Yellow Brick Road at the Strawberry Studios, that converted chateau in France. The biggest selling single from the album was Benny and the Jets, a song which, at first anyway, Elton John didn't think should be a single.
The live pieces are taken from a concert that we did at the Royal Festival Hall, which some of it appeared on the Here and There album. And it was Gus Dudgeon's idea just to put some live footage during the solo and everything. And it happened to be in sync, the clapping from that concert, on a different number, to be in sync with the Benny and the Jets, which is really strange.
There's an interesting thing about Benny and the Jets, because, again, Benny and the Jets was it's a song that lyrically has been totally, I mean, misconstrued in certain areas. And I mean, when I wrote that lyric, the song was supposed to be about a futuristic rock and roll band called Benny and the Jets. And in my mind, and if you look on the original Yellow Brick Road cover, the drawing that David Larkham did that I told him to do was how I saw Benny and the Jets. And Benny and the Jets is the Robert Palmer video of Addicted to Love. Mm. That's how Benny and the Jets were supposed to be. They were supposed to be like a computer on band, you know, where they had a front singer, but all of the band looked exactly alike. I mean, they were supposed to be a robotized band. And that's, if you look on the cover, you'll see that Benny is a girl, a very sort of butch kind of, but beautiful girl. And the backing band, although it's the other way around to the Robert Palmer thing, but the band all are exactly alike. And I remember when I saw the Addicted to Love video, I thought, that's Benny and the Jets.
if that album was out today, we could have had 10 singles maybe off that album. But we already had the next album done. I mean, for example, Benny and the Jets, Candle in the Wind was the single, the third single. The first single was Saturday Night, It's All Right for Fighting. The second single was Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. And the third single, I Wanted Candle in the Wind, which was the single everywhere else in the world. And we were doing the next album. We were doing Caribou at Caribou in America. MCA said, this guy called Pat Piblo from MCA said, listen, we really want Benny and the Jets out. And I said, no way. I mean, still to this day, I cannot see that as a hit single. And I said, no. And then he phoned up Monday, said, it's number one black record in Detroit. And it broke out of Detroit, but not on pop. No, it went black. And of course, that got to my ego, because I mean, being the hugest black music fan, I said, okay, release it. And because it went number one, it had both. It went number one black and number one pop, I think. I'm not sure if it went number one black, but it had that crossover appeal.
One song from Yellow Brick Road has been a hit twice in its original lyrical form. Once when the album came out, and again as a live recording in 1987. Bernie Taupin talks about his original version, tribute to Marilyn Monroe, called Candle in the Wind.
It started off this rage of people thinking that I was obsessed with Marilyn Monroe. And actually, I mean, I wrote it more... It wasn't supposed to be in total homage to her. It was really... I wasn't majorly a fan of hers. I mean, I liked her. I thought the tragedy of her life was the thing that made it interesting to me. And I just thought it fit perfectly into the idea of doing a song around it. And the title has been used... several times. I mean, I think it was used by Clive Davis when he was talking about Janis Joplin. I mean, Solzhenitsyn wrote a play called Candle in the Wind. And I just thought it was a perfect... I like to work off of titles. When I write lyrics, I like to come up with a title first. When I got that title, it seemed to fit her life, and then it built around that. But obviously, once it came out, everybody thought I was obsessed with Marilyn, and sort of I received sort of dozens and dozens of things from fans. I mean, I got some great things. The only thing I still have is the thing that Elton gave me, which is fabulous. He gave me for my I think it might have been my 21st birthday.
God,
which is her dress bust that she had all her dresses made on, and it's fabulous. It's a big Perspex case. With all sort of lights around it, and you plug it in, and it lights up and flashes, and I've still got that because that's fabulous. But I was not as obsessed with her as people seem to think. The obvious question people always ask about, your best songs. I think that's definitely in there. I think it's probably lyrically and melodically one of the finest songs we've ever written.
Goodbye, Norma Jean. No, I never knew you at all. You had the grace to hold yourself. Those around you crawled. They crawled out of the woodwork, and they whispered into your brain. They set you on the treadmill, and they made you change your name. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never knowing. And I would have liked to know you, but I was just a kid. Your candle burned out long before the legend ever did. Loneliness was tough. Pain was the price you paid. Even when you died, oh, the press still hounded you. All the papers had to say was that Marilyn was found in the news. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never knowing cling to when the rain set in. And I would have liked to know you, but I was just a kid. The candle burned out long before the legend ever did. more than just our Marilyn Monroe. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never knowing who to cling to when the rain set in.
Some 24 years after Candle in the Wind's original recording, tragedy would cause a whole new epilogue to be written. The sudden death of a real-life princess along life's yellow brick road would cause the candle to flicker in a harsh wind, only to burn brighter than ever before, which you'll hear about later in Hour 2. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and discover all of your favorite rockers at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard in the studio for part one of this classic album's anniversary as Elton John and Bernie Taupin bid farewell, Yellow Brick Road.
This is Bernie Taupin.
And I'm Elton John in the studio for Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road.
And I'm Redbeard. Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road's title song was seen by some as a reference to the hype and frenzy that accompanied Elton's rush to stardom in the early 1970s. Here's the man who wrote the words, Bernie Taupin, in the studio.
Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road, I mean, it encompasses so many different things and can be looked at in so many different ways, too. You know, there's part of it can be me, you know, coming up from the north of England, you know, going down to London. There's part of it is, you know, going back to the old Wizard of Oz situation and paralleling that thing, and Elton sort of leaving certain things behind with discovering new goals. Mm. It just seemed to work as an album title. I can't again remember exactly how it came up, but it just seemed to work, and it was a nice thematic kind of feel about it, you know. So I think you can look into that song and you can see lots of, everybody can pull something out of it and say, yeah, hey, I dig that, I appreciate that, I understand that.
When are you gonna come down? When are you going to land? I should have stayed on the phone. I should have listened to my own mind. You know you can't hold me forever. I didn't sign up for you. I'm not a present for your friends to open. This boy's too young to be. You can't plant me in your path.
Over the years, Elton John has always seemed ambivalent about his stardom and all that goes with it. One day, Elton would be prancing on stage in the most outrageous costumes. Lady Gaga has nothing on Elton John's stuff from back then. The next day, Elton would be talking about retiring from performing altogether. Elton John's is now his flamboyant stage act was often misunderstood.
I can't put me on a treadmill. I mean, that's how I feel now. I mean, there is a certain, you know, I didn't want to end up as, you know, like most rock and roll stars do. I mean, I'm talking about the Chuck Berrys of this world and people who put out such fine material for a while and then get burnt out or don't, you know, just, I can't understand why you can't rely on it. Yeah. And I never wanted to get like that. I think my career was misinterpreted a lot. When I wore the costumes in the early days, some people said, like, oh, he doesn't need to do that. And the reason I left my first band in the first place, Bluesology, when I was much younger, before I became Elton John, was the fact that I refused to play to people who were eating. And one of the worst thing the musician can do is to play to people who are not interested in what you're doing. And there's so many great piano players in bars. They're playing to people who are not even listening, they're just eating. And I was always poking my tongue out at that rather than loving it. I mean, it was just, I find that side of show business a bit hideous, to say the least.
Biographer John Tobler says of the song Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, he said that your lyrics were, and I quote him, as much a lament as a celebration.
I suppose to a certain degree there's some truth in that. I mean, Yellow Brick Road is about having to find the disillusionment in order to appreciate the past. And now I don't know if that makes any sense.
Well, put it in context of 1972 and 1973 in your life.
It's a bit like the Honky Cat thing, you know. It's because I was a country boy and, you know, I it was that, you know, pack up my bags and go to the big city, London, you know, and see the bright lights. But at the same time, in order to achieve what I wanted to achieve, it was the only place to do that, you know. But there was still that yearning, you know, for the good old ways and the country comforts and the things like that. And I think that's always why there was a slight dichotomy in the music back then. There was always that pulling from one to the other. There was always the songs about the love for the country, and then there was the songs about the disillusionment of life in the city, you know, if it's All the Young Girls Love Alice or, you know, Sweet Painted Ladies or, and then, but, you know, you'd go back and find other songs that sort of said, yeah, I'd like to get back and see what's going on down at the old local, or, you know, I need to see some greenery and see some animals or whatever. So the long and the short of it, yeah, I think I was being pulled in both directions.
Thank you. prison bells were robbed by ancient men. The roots were formed by twisted roots, your roots were twisted then. I was reborn before a life could die. Phoenix bird will leave this world to fly. If the phoenix bird can fly, then so can I. And tell me a great deal, tell us it feels.
From the album Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road, Gray Seal, a song with Bernie Taupin lyrics that Elton John claims he doesn't understand, but which Elton really likes, and surprisingly, Bernie Taupin doesn't even care for it much.
Yeah, I don't particularly like it. But the funny thing is that Elton doesn't understand half of the things I write, and freely admits it too. I was actually telling somebody a story. I think I was telling the boys last night or at some point, I was saying that there was actually a time, I think it was about, there was some song that we wrote, and about 10 years later, he was singing on stage, and I was standing on the side of the stage, and he actually turned around, saw me in the wings, and went, I just suddenly realized what this song's about. So that's actually true. I don't remember what song it was, but that's actually a true story. But now, Gray Seal, it's not one of my favorites. I know he really likes it. But again, it's a typical Taupin montage of just things that sound quite good thrown together.
Just prior to the release of the album Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road, Elton John placed the single Honky Cat top 10. Daniel, number 2. And Crocodile Rock was a number one hit. But I remember wondering at the time if some unseen force was pushing Elton John in a direction too pop for rock and roll credibility. Goodbye Yellow Brick Road's sheer volume and depth of songwriting styles banished any doubt. I asked lyricist Bernie Taupin if it was designed that way.
I mean, whether it was subconscious or direct, I'm not sure. I mean, saying we were veering away from things like Tumbleweed and Mad Men, you know. I mean, I think if you look back at our body of work, you can put them into boxes. You know, you put the first lot, the second lot, you know, and then there's the middle bit, you know, there's there's almost the teeny bop stuff, you know, the glam rock kind of don't shoot me stuff, you know. I think Yellow Brick Road was a melting pot of everything. I think it had basically, if you want to say it, you know, something for everybody, you know.
It did, though.
It was like a department store, you know. If you wanted the hard rock thing, it's over here with Funeral for a Friend and Love Lies Bleeding, you know. There was stuff like Sweet Painted Ladies, you know, there was great ballads. It was a huge, broad canvas, and I think it was a combination of everything from the past and everything to come, you know, all culminating in one and on two records, you know. We never really thought anything out. When we went into, in those days, when we went in to make a record, there was never any considering what kind of record we were going to make. We just wrote a lot of songs. And for some reason, they blend pretty well together.
This is a song written in 1973.
Thank you.
That Elton John and Bernie Taupin simply were on a songwriting roll, which the traditional single album format proved to be woefully inadequate. The single Philadelphia Freedom was yet another one of Elton John's 7 U.S. hits at number 1 in a row, recorded when they were supposedly taking a break from recording. That's a terrific live performance from Labor Day weekend 1993 outside Boston at Foxborough Stadium. But we're only midway down the yellow brick road. I'm Redbeard. I'm Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests Elton John and Bernie Taupin, who will be back here in the studio this same time next week for the conclusion. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song, Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.